optimal minimal.
At this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Now would have seemed an appropriate time.
What if I did the opposite?
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I get asked all the time what I would take if I could only take one supplement. The answer is invariably Athletic Greens. I view it as all-in-one nutritional insurance. I recommended it, in fact, in the 4-Hour Body. This is more than 10 years ago, and I did not get paid to do so. With approximately 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food-sourced ingredients, you'd be very hard-pressed to find a more nutrient-dense and comprehensive formula on the market. It has multivitamins, multimineral greens complex, probiotics and prebiotics for gut health, an immunity formula, digestive enzymes, adaptogens, and much more. I usually take it once or twice a day just to make sure I've covered my bases if I miss anything I'm not aware of. Of course, I focus on nutrient-dense meals to begin with. That's the basis. But Athletic Greens makes it easy to get a lot of nutrition when whole foods aren't readily available. From travel packets, I always have them in my bag when I'm zipping around. Right now, Athletic Greens is giving my audience a special offer on top of their all-in-one formula, which is a free vitamin D supplement and 5 free travel packs with your first subscription purchase. Many of us are deficient in vitamin D. I've found that true for myself, which is usually produced in our bodies from sun exposure. So adding a vitamin D supplement to your daily routine is a great option for additional immune support. Support your immunity, gut health, and energy by visiting athleticgreens.com/TFS. You'll receive up to a year's supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your subscription. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/TFS, as in Tim Ferriss Show. athleticgreens.com/TFS.
The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's WORKLAB, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, boys and girls, ladies and germs. This is Tim Ferriss, and welcome to another episode of The Tim Ferriss Show. This one is an experimental episode, as I often indulge in, and it features one of my favorite writers, an inspiring fellow, Paulo Coelho, who has long been one of my writing inspirations. His books of near universal appeal span from The Alchemist to the most recent Adultery, and his work has been translated into more than 70 languages. Who knew there were even 70 languages on the planet? And few people know that The Alchemist, which was sold to an original Brazilian publisher, which printed 900 copies, has now sold more than 65 million copies worldwide. I expect it's probably more than 100 million. That original Brazilian publisher, after the 900 copies, declined to reprint it. It wasn't until after his subsequent novel, called Brida, that The Alchemist was revived and took off. I, for one, have always been very impressed with consistent writers. Paulo averages one book every 2 years, and he is staggeringly consistent. As I am recording this, I'm under the pressure of deadlines, and I more often feel like Kurt Vonnegut did, also one of my favorite writers, and he explains it with a quote, quote, "When I write, I feel like an armless, legless man with a crayon in his mouth." That's most of the time that I spend writing. So my output is erratic at best, and I wondered, how does Paulo write? What is his process? How does he think about it? And this episode covers a lot of that. It might seem like a niche topic for this podcast, for those of you who say, well, I'm not a writer, what am I going to get out of this? And what I would encourage you to think of as you listen, and the audio is a little bit grainy because he recorded it from Geneva in Switzerland, that it showcases in many ways the struggle and how someone at the top of their game, who has seemingly beaten all of the odds, still has the daily struggle. And I reached out to him. He was kind enough to reply with the audio that I've included. And he really provides some gems and answers to the following questions, which I will read right now because he doesn't always repeat them. And here we go. So the first is, when on deadline, what is the first thing you do in the morning? What does your daily schedule look like? Do you take any days off? And what determines if you've had a, quote, successful, end quote, writing day? The next, how do you capture ideas that might be helpful in your writing? These days, what software and tools do you use for writing? Next, how much of your books do you visualize or outline up front versus writing organically piece by piece? In other words, how much of the story arc have you decided before you start writing? Let's take two books as examples, The Alchemist and Aleph, A-L-E-P-H. Otherwise, how did the process differ for these two books? What are your most common mistakes that you see first-time novelists making, most common weaknesses? Do you base your characters on real people? Why or why not? If not, how do you develop those characters? And then last, what are the two to three things you personally find most invigorating or helpful when you're stuck or feel stagnated with writing slash ideas? Do you have a team of any type, researchers, etc., who help you? And he also offered a few other suggestions. The first is some context. The sentence in Alice in Wonderland that he mentions is, "Begin at the beginning," the king said gravely, "and go on till you come to the end. Then stop." That is it. And he covers a lot on his YouTube channel, and for all of his musings, you can certainly see his Facebook fan page, which is just facebook.com/Paulo Coelho. And he has the same handle on Twitter. I think he has something along the lines of 28 million fans as I record this, which is astonishing. So without further ado, please enjoy this short and experimental episode with the incredible Paulo Coelho. And I will link to anything he mentions in the show notes as well as additional resources at 4hourworkweek.com/podcast.
Hello, team. Paulo Coelho. Pleasure to talk to you. Looking forward to meet you, as I said in my email. As for your answers, I will try to be as brief as I can. About the deadline, I don't have deadlines. I write a book once every 2 years, and I sit down, of course. I have the book inside of me, and I start procrastinating. In the morning, I check in my emails, I check news, I check everything that I could check, or just to postpone it the moment to see it and face myself as a writer in front of my book. So let's say that for 3 hours I'm trying to tell myself that, oh no, no, later, later, later. And then one moment I say, okay, just not lose the face in front of myself, I'm going to sit and I'm going to write half an hour. And I do, and of course this half an hour becomes 10 hours in a row. That's why I write my books very quickly, because I cannot stop. I cannot stop, and then of course at night I take a lot of notes because I'm still in the speed of writing book, or the book. The next day, these notes are totally useless. The same thing happens again. Checking emails, going to social communities, postponing, procrastinating, and I cannot stop. Probably this is my inner ritual, you know. I have to feel guilty, of not writing for 3 hours or 4 hours, but then when I'm there, I start writing and non-stop. As I said before, in two weeks I have the book ready. Okay, next question. My daily schedule while writing books is the one that I just described. Trying to escape from my task of writing my books. My normal daily schedule is in the morning checking my social communities, answering emails, then walking is for me my way of thinking, my way of meditating. It's not that I'm thinking, but I am in a kind of trance, totally connected with the present moment. And when I arrive from walking, I sit here and then I start really connecting to my social communities. I work with 3 or 4 people, not more than that. My agent in Barcelona, my office in Brazil, and my webmaster. This is the only three people that have access to me. There's a very strong shield, so I can really use my time to do what I think I should do to fulfill this blessing that it was bestowed on me, that was to allow me to live my personal legend, to become a writer against all odds, because Brazilians don't have this tradition to be translated. And besides that, there are very few authors who can make a living out of writing, not in the U.S., but all over the world. However, I was so committed to my work that it was my dream. It was my dream from the very beginning. So I really enjoy what I do. I don't work. In fact, what I'm doing is really to have pleasure and have fun and have social responsibility towards my readers, myself, and the world where I live. Do I take any days off? I take many. Well, back to what I said, I force myself to give to take 2 weeks off, but not during the my writing period. My writing period is like I go into a tank, and I only can leave this tank after finishing the book. So I, as Alice in Wonderland, Lewis Carroll says, Alice in Wonderland, it's very easy to write a book. Start in the beginning, go through the middle, and go to the end, and then stop. That's it. No secret. I can later quote Lewis Carroll's sentence in an email. I don't know it by heart, but it's more or less what I said. A successful writing day is the day that I suffer in the morning and I have fun in the evening. Fun by writing. Fun, I will not describe this as fun. It's also painful, but and is exhausting because I don't realize that I'm totally connected. I'm in a kind of trances. When I go to bed after 10 hours working, well, the adrenaline is still circulating in my blood. So it takes hours to sleep, and there is this notepad by my side, and I take notes, but I take notes only to take them out from my head. They will be useless next day. I never used notes that I took on leave to continue writing. And this happened since I wrote my first book, The Pilgrimage. I cannot change this process. I wish I could sit and write and not feel guilty for 4 or 5 hours during the day. It's impossible. How do I capture ideas that might be helpful in your writing? I don't. I try to live my life. I do live my life. And eventually some subject pops up when this cycle of 2 years ends. And there are several layers of ideas, you know? I think, I'm going to write a book about this, and then I start, and then the second, and then the third. But hidden behind all these books that are not ready to be written or should never be written, it is the book that I want to be written, that I want to write. So, and it is the book that wants to be written. I think it's much more a decision from the book than from the writer. And then when you discover the first sentence, behind this first sentence there is a thread that takes you to the last sentence of the book. Let me give you an example. When I wrote The Alchemist, I want to write a metaphor about me, about my life. And to be honest, I don't know why did I choose a shepherd boy. I never been a shepherd. I did not do any research on shepherds, not even in Islam. I heard someone when I was in Israel mentioning the five precepts of Islam. But the book was there. I think that when you write a book, as it is written in The Alchemist, you connect to the soul of the world. You connect to this energy that I call inspiration. Everybody calls inspiration. And then there's not that such effort to write it. As for Aleph, I took this Trans-Siberian journey in 2006, and I never thought I would be able to write a book on it. Why? Because it's so difficult to explain this point that contains everything. So I lived my experience traveling for 3 months. I met this Aleph, this point. But I thought I would be unable to write about it. And then one day, 2 years ago, I was talking to a friend, and she said, why don't you write about it, the Trans-Siberian? This long trip. I said, first, because I don't feel like writing this. Second, because it's not every single experience that I have in my life that I want to write. On the opposite. I write about a few experiences, but not all of them. But, well, and then, okay, 3 days later, I got this inspiration. Yes, I should write. The book is ready. And I started the book with a word that normally you don't start a book. It is no. Nobody starts a book saying no. It's considered to be a bad vibe. That said, the book is now, at the moment that I'm recording this interview, number one everywhere. It was released 2 weeks ago in Germany, and it went to number three 1 week ago, and then this week number two. So, if you want to capture ideas, you're lost. Because you're not going to live your life. You're going to be capturing ideas. You're going to be detached from the emotions that you need to be, well, to live fully. You'll be an observer and not a human being that is living his or her life. Except of course for technical stuff, I strongly encourage writers not to think about writing every time that they do something. Forget notebooks. Forget taking notes. Let what is important remains. What's not important goes away. So when you sit down to write, there is this process of purge, this process of cleansing, that only the important things remain. So it's much more easy than taking notes and overload yourself with information. Software and tools that you use for writing. I would like to learn about it more. I don't want this podcast to be very long. I know that it is a blog, but basically I use Word, and that's all. That's all. Having said that, a writer today is not a writer of books. He or she must be fully conscious that there are different types of writing. You can write for books, you can write for mobiles, you can write Twitter, you can write blogs, and each and every platform requires a different technique. This is what is very exciting for writers today, is we are in front of a new challenge, and you have to learn how to do it. A tweet is not a book. A book is not a tweet. So, but please, writers should exercise training in this new techniques. Let's forget about the classic format of books and move to the way that internet is now forcing us to move. Forcing, I mean, encouraging us to write. As for the story arc, there are only four stories. The story of a love story between two people, a love story between three people, the struggle for power, and the journey. Every single book that it is in a bookstore deals with these four archetypes, these four themes. So you have to decide only among these four themes. But back, it is not, in my case, it's not me who decides. It is the book itself. I'm not saying, well, the book is powerful, it is an angel that it is whispering to me what to write. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that, normally I have 10,000 books that I feel like writing, and at the end of the day I only write one. Let's take two books as examples, you said. Okay, Mr. Aleph. How did your process differ from these two books? They are very much close. One is a metaphor, that it is The Alchemist. The other one is a real experience, my own experience. However, both of them are in the classic story arc of travel, of a journey. They are very much close. They are part of my soul. If there is, I think that I answered the question. What are the most common mistakes that you see first-time novelists making? The most common mistake is the first-time novelists are always postponing. And then they are very, very much insecure. When they finish and they publish a book, and you talk to them, and they said, oh, but you need to see my next book. This is totally nonsense. If you talk to many writers, they say that. And I don't understand. I really don't understand. Why do they say that? You cannot underrate yourself. You cannot feel insecure. You cannot sell your next book by despising or underrating the book that it was just published. So as for style and this type of things, don't try to innovate. I mean, you can innovate in Twitter, Facebook, books, mobiles, but don't try to innovate storytelling. Storytelling is the since the dawn of times, and it is magical and tell a good story. I see people trying to work so much in style, you know, finding different ways to tell the same thing. It's like fashion, you know. Style is the dress, but the dress does not dictate what is inside of the dress, the person. So what counts is the person inside of the dress, not the dress itself. Of course, you need to write with good taste and another advice that I would give is that keep it simple. use trust your reader. He or she has a lot of imagination. Don't try to describe things. Give a hint, and they will fulfill this hint with their own imaginations. That's why I'm so reluctant to sell the rights of my book to movies, because there you have everything. The reader does not need to think. However, if I say, like in a laugh, at the very beginning, well, I am in my house in the Pyrenees, and there is an oak there. Well, I don't need to explain the details of my house in the Pyrenees. I only need to put the two elements that are important. The oak, myself, and the person that I'm talking to. And that's all. So keep it simple. Trust your reader. Understand that he or she can fulfill the empty spaces. Don't over-explain. Most common weaknesses of first-time novelists, of course, lack of self-confidence. When The Alchemist was published, it did not sell, so the first publisher gave me the book back, but I was so convinced that I started knocking doors, and then I found a second publisher. Imagine, there was 1 month in my life that I could really quit my dream, and if I was not perseverant enough, The Alchemist will not be the worldwide success as it is today. The second weakness is to pay too much attention to critics. I don't think this happened in U.S., but outside U.S., critics, well, they're losing ground very fast because now internet has this power of promoting or killing anything. But still writers want to please their peers. They want to please other writers. They want to be recognized by the academia, by the system. Forget about this. Who cares, you know? You should care to share your soul and not to please other writer who is going to write a review that nobody's going to read. Just tell you how good you are, and then you are also obliged in the future to write a review about his books. No, forget. This is really a weakness. Don't pay attention, and also don't answer to reviewers. Don't answer to critics. Do I base my characters in real people? Depends. In many books, yes. Aleph, of course. The Pilgrimage, my first book, yes, non-fiction. The Valkyries, but yes, you cannot take something out of nothing. So when you write a book, you use your experience, not your conscious experience, but things that are important, as I said, and that remains in you. And I don't develop my characters. I give them free rein. They guide me. When I used to read that in biographies of other writers, I said, "Oh, these people, they are trying to cheat me, because come on, how can a character guide a writer? They are just trying to make it very mystical, very, you know, like they wear in an ivory tower. But in fact, when I start writing, I saw that this is totally true. Except, of course, for some books that should be based in concrete experiences. In my case, it is The Pilgrimage, Valkyries, and Aleph. Let me, yeah. What are the two, three things I find most invigorating or helpful when you are stuck or feel stagnated with writing ideas? Okay, there is only one thing. For there are no two, three, four. When I feel stagnated, I promise to myself that if I don't feel inspired, I need to move forward. I need to have discipline. So, and it happens in the middle of a book. No, there I am, without knowing how to continue the story, even if it is a nonfiction story. But then I say, okay, you are fighting with me? Your book are fighting with me? Okay. I'm going to sit here and I'm not going to leave you alone until I find my way out of this crossroads. And then it may take 10 minutes, it may take 10 hours, but if you don't have discipline enough, you don't move forward. So at the end of the day, Tim, writing books is basically sharing your experience. And this is part of the human condition. And if you really are honest, if you don't try to feel a formula, to follow a formula, you have to be free to write. I wrote about the prostitution in 11 minutes. I wrote about madness in Veronica Decides to Die. So I wrote about things that are important to me, issues that are important to me. And you should be free to write things that you feel and not try to repeat the same formula over and over again. So, and I don't have researchers. No. If I need any research, of course, when I wrote Aleph, I did not take notes, as I told you. I had this fantastic experience, but then I am in a city in the middle of Siberia and I forgot the name of the street, of the hotel. Then I do a quick research. That's all. But if you overload your book with a lot of research, you're going to be very boring to yourself and to your readers. Books are not there to show how intelligent and cultivated you are. Books are out there to show your heart, to show your soul, and to tell you, your friends, readers, I'm not alone, and I hope you are not, because you can identify yourself with my books or my words, as I can identify yourself with your garden, with your music, with your anything that we do with love. Thank you very much. Sorry, it is a little bit big. I'm going to upload and to send you the podcast. May God bless you, as we say here, au revoir.
Hey guys, this is Tim again. Just a few more things before you take off. Number one, this is Five Bullet Friday. Do you want to get a short email from me? Would you enjoy getting a short email from me every Friday that provides a little morsel of fun before the weekend? And Five Bullet Friday is a very short email where I share the coolest things I've found or that I've been pondering over the week. That could include favorite new albums that I've discovered. It could include gizmos and gadgets and all sorts of weird shit that I've somehow dug up in the world of the esoteric as I do. It could include favorite articles that I've read and that I've shared with my close friends, for instance. And it's very short. It's just a little tiny bite of goodness before you head off for the weekend. So if you want to receive that, check it out. Just go to 4hourworkweek.com. That's 4hourworkweek.com, all spelled out, and just drop in your email and you will get the very next one. And if you sign up, I hope you enjoy it.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.